it's been a really interesting opportunity to dovetail really 30 years of working in gender-based violence to being now in a position to utilize technology in a way to create safer spaces.
Welcome to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast by Coralis, a global community of women and non-binary people making real progress on the world's to-do list. Together, we're transforming the world to become more equitable and sustainable.
I'm MJ Ryan, one of the development guides for Coralis, and I'm so happy to be here today with Mary Lobson of Reese Community, who is going to tell us about all of her exciting news. But first, Mary, what does Reese do?
So Reese is an online platform. It stands for Respect, Educate, Empower Survivors. And it's an online platform that I initially developed to address sexual violence on campus. So it's a software as a service where it's trauma-informed, survivor-centered, but also gathers critical data and insights that can help inform prevention for organizations.
Fantastic. But your big news is, since you launched for campuses, something recently has gone on differently, right? What happened?
That is true. So we launched in September 2020, and we were a CEO at the time, Coralis Venture of 2021. And at that time, we just had a few campus partners in higher ed across Canada, based in Winnipeg. And we've evolved over the time and really broadened the scope of what we can use the platform for. So taking the original concept of the platform, but broadening the partners that we serve and the things that can be reported. So we have been working the past, I guess, a year or so now, it's maybe even been a little bit longer, through the National Hockey League to create reporting, centralized reporting, through a number of hockey leagues across North America. So it was very exciting earlier, or I guess last month now, in October, to launch what's called the Respect Hockey Culture Center. And it's a place where players, employees, coaches, officials, kind of anyone involved within the leagues and the hockey ecosystem can go. There's reporting there and multiple reporting options. I think we have 30 reporting pathways on the platform, as well as information about supports and resources. So it's been really exciting. It's very much a groundbreaking initiative in sport, but then also really in other places to see, or other, you know, sectors or verticals, to see this alliance of organizations coming together, similar goals, similar challenges, but really coming together in a unified way to reduce barriers to reporting. So that's, you know, one of the things, working towards creating a more inclusive and safe environment for their members, and then really making sure that supports and resources are available for folks. So it's been exciting to be a part of something like this.
Congratulations. I know how hard you worked on that deal. I remember talking to you about it, I think over a year ago. So you made it happen, Mary. Congratulations. That's
fantastic. Patience was a key to this one. Absolutely. You know, and everybody was amazing to work with, but yeah, it took time, right? And sometimes things that are worth it are definitely things that you are in for the long haul or the long game on.
Yeah. That I want to see you go into the U.S. college athletic departments, right? Because we've had so many scandals here about sexual abuse of gymnasts and other folks. That's where I'd love to see you next.
You know, our focus has been in Canada. I'm based in Winnipeg, but we certainly have been engaged in conversations in the U.S., both in higher ed, so colleges and universities, but then also in the sports system as well. So we'll continue to have those conversations and hope that over time, again, that we can be part of shifting the conversations, both for survivors and people who've experienced harm, but then also for organizations who have a responsibility to, you know, protect them and create safe spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we always talk about here at Coralis is on your own terms. What we mean by that is that we don't push a particular way of growing or being or not growing or whatever. And one of the things I love about you is that you broke all the rules of growing a business. And so just for our listeners, mm-hmm. let me describe. Typically people say, all right, you pick a sector like education and you saturate the market on that. Then you switch to, let's say, corporate or sports or whatever. Yeah. And I remember the very first time I talked to you, which was in 2021, you said you had this vision to do all three at the same time. And I remember thinking, that's not what you're supposed to do in quotes. And, yeah. but I'm here to support what I said out loud. I'm here to support you or whatever you want, whatever yeah. you want to do. And it's really, yeah. really working, isn't it? To do the three.
You know what? I had a vision early on for what this could be. And I think as we've moved along in our conversations from sector to sector to sector, we've had feedback that has supported those decisions or that following that path. I think it could have gone a different way had we gotten different feedback. But for me, one of the important things has been to kind of follow my instincts, which isn't necessarily, you know, I don't know if that's business 101 or anything, but it's been, you know, we've had interest in sport. So why would we not follow that path? Mm-hmm. We'll be launching very soon into the oil and gas sector, the energy sector. Wow. Again, that wasn't necessarily the vertical that we were going for when we started, but, you know, they talk about pivoting and adapting. And one of the things for us that's been, I think, kind of interesting is our platform has really remained the same, but we've just been able to see the various opportunities and different operational environments that it can be used in. And so that whole question of going kind of, you know, narrow and deep or shallow and wide, you know, we've kind of opted right now for the shallow and wide. But I think, you know, we launched in September 2020, so we haven't been around really that long. And in this particular moment, we're really focusing. So we're, you know, we've kind of got our sights set in a couple verticals and are really focusing. So I think part of it is not being so committed in one direction that you know, you're being so laser focused on something that you yes. don't see the other opportunities, but then you also have the awareness of saying, you know what, you know, maybe we're spreading a little too thin or going too, you know, or whatever it is. And so being able to pull back. So just recognizing that back and forth kind of that can exist and not being so having tunnel vision that you're not seeing kind of where you should be putting your effort.
Well, I've always been impressed by your business instincts, what you call your following your intuition. And tell everybody what your background is, because this is a new territory for you in terms of, yeah. of being a venture startup, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think of myself as a serial entrepreneur, but the things I made before, I started two not-for-profit organizations. Mm. They were both in gender-based violence, both working with folks that have, in one case, families, and then other more broadly in the community, experienced domestic violence. So I've started not-for-profits. And I think, you know, there's a lot of learnings there that are transferable absolutely mm-hmm. into, you know, a startup. Starting something from scratch in both scenarios, or one in particular, I was starting something. We were the first in Canada to develop the supervised access center that I built at the time. And so that vision, I think, you know, that ability to hold that vision and help bring others to the vision has served me well, kind of, you know, across. It's very different. Now we are venture backed. So we have venture capital VCs in the US. We also have some angel investors, you know, so that whole fundraising process was something that was new to me. But it's been a really interesting opportunity to dovetail really 30 years of working in gender-based violence to something I came more recently to in about 2009, which was the intersection of technology and gender-based violence, and really, you know, being now in a position to utilize technology in a way to create safer spaces. It's been cool. Today I got an invite to sit on a panel, you know, talking about women in tech, and I have a very untraditional, you know, way of having gotten here.
Yeah, and isn't your background in social work?
Yeah. It's always been social services, you know, since in my 20s. And, you know, I'm a non-technical founder. I'm from Winnipeg. You know, a lot of people, where are you from? You know, certainly there's lots of Canadians on the call, but yeah, just very non-traditional in terms of what you think of when you think of founders. And it's been interesting getting feedback from VCs as we're raising money over time, is that we break a lot of the molds. And, you know, there's not a lot of precedent for gender-based violence, technology at scale. So there's a lot of interest in, you know, where are we going to go and what are we going to do and how far can we take Reese? And so I think that's exciting to push the limits around that and see where we go.
Well, the other thing I know about you is you're a beautifully humble person. Mm-hmm. And so I can say this, but you probably wouldn't. But I had a spy at one of the pitching accelerators you were at who told me that you, not the youngest person in the room, and again, all the other things you said, background social services, no tech background, and blew all the VCs away, and you were the darling of the entire accelerator as far as the VCs were concerned.
Well, thank you. I see you smiling. Thank you. That was a tough room, you know, and I think, again, we've gone in untraditional places. I've been fortunate in, you know, the short time we've been around to be involved with CEO and then Corliss. I've been part of the Tampa Bay Wave. I've been part of North Forge. We are a recent graduate from Creative Destruction Lab in Rockies in Calgary. And I think it's been interesting. You know, I am often one of the oldest founders in the room. I'm an old female founder from Winnipeg, and I think people have thought the topic or the what we've created and all of it is kind of an unlikely package in terms of founder and product.
So why are you getting so much support, therefore, do you think? What do you attribute your success, given that you break all the stereotypes of mm-hmm. the people who get funded?
You know, that's a great question. I think part of it is timing. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think we came at a time where there is a level of readiness in our society to be having these conversations. Mm-hmm. I started these conversations in 2016, which is even before Me Too. They were never going to go anywhere. So I think timing has been a factor. We are also post-COVID. I had these conversations prior to COVID where supporting survivors online wasn't ever, you know, people didn't even think like that if you worked in this world supporting survivors. So I think technology has evolved, or our thinking about technology has evolved, and that we're at a different place. So I think those have been factors. I also think, and our chief technical lead, Chris, would always say this, like, you're doing it. So where, you know, we had early success, and we've been able to continue to build on that success. And I think that's what people have seen kind of over and over again, our ability to have deep understanding of the space that we work in. As well, we've been able to approach the problem from a different orientation than other people are. Our chief technical advisor, Krista Rossi, I think I've said this before, but he was the chief architect of the Mac operating system. So where I have this, in, you know, expertise or long history in the gender-based violence field, he has that same you know, expertise. He's founded things, you know, he's exited. He has a really good understanding of the technical side and the investor side. And so it's been a really good coming together of those two things that have, I think, really helped to propel us and move us forward.
No question. It really helps to have a tech founder partner for sure. Mm-hmm. If you're having a tech product. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you've learned along the way that has been surprising to you?
You know, I think what you said at the very beginning about Corliss as kind of being where people are, supporting people where they are. And I know I have felt pressure in just even in the short time to be a particular way, or, you know, be a certain kind of founder, or put my focus here, or whatever it is. You get so much information and opinions from people. And so for me, the ability to listen to all of that, because I'm so fortunate to have a lot of people who are much smarter than I around me that I can draw from. But I think the on your own terms is an important thing. And I'm a little bit introverted. So I'm not, you know, I look at people who are out like working the things and going to the events, and I think, oh, like I should go there. I should be there. And sometimes I am, sometimes it's like, I don't really want to, you know, and I don't think it's going to necessarily hinder us. You know, it's weighing out those opportunities with investors. I did a number of venture meetings we've raised at a few different kind of points. And I got feedback very early on that was consistent by everyone. And I thought, okay, I can do my 100 meetings. I might find some investors out there, or we can just stop and we're just going to focus on sales right now. So again, just, you know, what have I learned? It's figuring out what our path forward is going to be, having it formed, you know, informed by the people around us, as I say, who have done this before, who have more experience, but really thinking about how do we want to move forward, and holding that, and also being open to new ideas around, okay, maybe we should go this way or that way. But I think that's one of the biggest things, I think, that I didn't know necessarily that I would grow or change or evolve that way in terms of my thinking.
Well, it's so fascinating, because I think the hardest things as a founder is to know what to pay attention to and what to ignore, right? You're like, what to ignore? No, I know that's not right, and I'm going to do this anyway, or that's good advice, I should stop, you know, or do pivot or change or whatever.
Yeah.
So that balance is really, really important to be able to navigate, right?
Well, and I don't want to bang my head against the wall. Like, just because I want to get into a sector, or I want to have a particular partner or customer, I'm not going to be so focused on getting them when there are other places that are seem open. So I know I've kind of used the analogy, or we've used it, you know, about kind of following threads, and you know what, opportunities that come up that, again, necessarily weren't planned for, necessarily weren't in my sight line, but have followed those paths, and they've led to some pretty cool places. So, you know, so I don't know if that's a strategy. I don't know if that's a go-to-market strategy, but it has certainly served us so far. And again, it's one thing to get customers or partners. It's another thing to really scale that. And I think, you know, the proof will be over time as we continue to expand.
Yeah. The way, what you're describing is what I call way open and way closed. And it is a strategy. It's a follow the energy strategy. It's like, oh, this is being too hard. No, go a different direction and see which ways are open. And you're right. Initially, when you're starting a business, it's really important to do that. And at some point you have to then start to decide, what am I going to pursue and what am I not going to pursue, right?
Yeah. Well, and I have found that the things that seemed hard or seemed closed at the time, now they're starting to open, right? Mm-hmm. So again, it's the timing thing. It's the perseverance. It's the persistence, you know, and even for us in some of the places maybe that appear closed, we've continued to nurture them. So whether that's, you know, just email campaigns or touching base every now and again, but just letting folks know that we're still thinking about them, and you know, should they be at a different place or ready, we'd love to have those conversations. So, being open to kind of whatever the possibilities are, but really focusing those efforts in where you're getting some momentum is important for sure.
I know it's only been a month, but like, what's happening with the hockey league? I mean, is there anything you can talk about of what you're noticing or learning or?
Yeah, it has only been a month. I think for me, I just got back, or 2 weeks ago now, I was at Primetime Sports and Entertainment Conference. And it's a conference in Toronto, and it really brings together a lot of sport organizations from across Canada, folks from the US. And I had the opportunity to sit on a panel. Brian Burke was the moderator of that panel. And, you know, he's someone, he's an icon. He's been around for much longer than I in the hockey world. And he just said, you know, for many, many, many years till this point, these are conversations that no one was having. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a moment, but like, that's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. Yes, absolutely.
That's why I'm here. And just being able to have them, you know, I left that conference with business cards in my pocket with, you know, hey, we'll follow up. And again, some really cool opportunities that wouldn't have been on my horizon, but that now we can look at pursuing in other types of environments. So I think that is the leverage, what's been created through the Respect Hockey Culture Center, and gain momentum elsewhere in other sports, and as well to grow the Hockey Culture Center, because now we've had interest from other leagues outside of the ones that were already providing support. So when things move forward like that, that's exciting. I had the opportunity to pitch at 43 North around the same time. It was about a month ago in Buffalo. And, you know, I did my pitch, whatever. Just so many people came up to me afterwards. You know, I'm a survivor. I've been impacted. And again, that's why we're doing this. We know that harm is so prevalent in so many different spaces. In addition, yes, you know, to sports and campus, we're in music festivals. We're in some mm-hmm. corporate environments. There's just lots of spaces where a platform like Reese could be. And so it's, you know, on one hand, it's unfortunate that we need something like this. But on the other hand, for, you know, someone who's been around and in this field for so long, you know, being in a predominantly man-filled room in sport and have them sitting there. There's a lot of sport management students at the mm-hmm. conference. And I just, like, I had these young guys coming to me saying, you know what, I loved your session and this is so important. And I think, you know, you're future leaders in sport, you know, so hearing about trauma-informed pathways and reporting and create safe spaces as a 20-something-year-old student, hopefully you will take that with you as you move forward. So, you know, I'm grateful that we're being given a platform to have some important conversations in spaces that, as I say, we otherwise wouldn't have been in for a long time, weren't part of. So I'm grateful for that.
Well, I'm so grateful to you for the really, really important work that you're doing. Yeah. And what we're talking about at the level of business is really just, I thank you for bringing it back to the impact, because that's what matters, right? Is that how do you have the biggest impact you can possibly have?
Absolutely.
If people want to connect to you, Mary, how do they do that? Like, maybe they know a corporation that might be interested, or maybe they're a sports agent or know a sports agent or whatever. So is there, how do they people reach you?
Yeah. So Mary, M-A-R-Y, just at reescommunity.com. So R-E-E-S community.com. Mary Lobson on LinkedIn, if someone wants to connect and follow me there. We're Reese Community on Instagram, but certainly happy to connect with folks. It's been a super busy fall. We were at the World Academic Summit in Sydney. So it's, you know, it's been a busy year. And I think what we've seen as we've traveled around is this issue knows no bounds, right? It's across sectors, it's across countries, it's across languages, it's across cultures. So if anyone's interested in having a chat, you know, or just connecting or whatever, happy to do that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mary. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, MJ. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast. Let us know what you thought of the episode and share this podcast with your friends. We invite you to join a global community of radically generous women and non-binary folks at www.corliss.world.